Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We are getting close to National Signing Day, what used to be the only National Signing Day in February. Of course, for the 2018 cycle, things have been a bit different with the early signing period. Georgia obviously cleaned up with that. A nation's number one class coming off those 3 days of our early signees. A lot of those guys now enrolled at the University of Georgia. But there is still work for Georgia left to do here for its 2018 class. And I think based on what I'm hearing from many of you who listen and watch the show every day, many of you care about Georgia football, there is one name that sort of stands above all the rest in terms of guys that you are interested in. And the best we can tell, the news on this guy is good right now. As a way of sort of setting this up, let me read you something that Barton Simmons, who's a sort of a national analyst for 24/7 Sports, let me read to you what he wrote at CBSSports.com as kind of a scene setter for the final days leading to Georgia's, really all of college football's 2018 class, Georgia in particular. Barton obviously makes mention of Georgia being number one. He writes this: Georgia was the story during the early signing period. Bulldogs landed 5 stars, offensive tackle Cade Mays, defensive end Brenton Cox, offensive guard Jamari Sawyer, as well as 4-star tight end Luke Ford, Channing Tindall, Devon Wilson, and then topped it all off by flipping Alabama cornerback Nadab Joseph. All that activity, Barton Simmons says, boosted Kirby Smart's class to the top of the 24/7 Sports composite team rankings. Ohio State's trailing close behind, but Georgia's signing day push gives it a lead that'll be tough for anybody to catch, even if it comes up dry for more commits in January. However, Barton Simmons says this: keep an eye on 5-star cornerback Tyson Campbell to possibly give Georgia the cherry on top of this phenomenal class. And I love that description from Barton Simmons, because I think that is, at CBSSports.com where he wrote this, sort of the perfect way to sort of describe exactly what Tyson Campbell, the elite cornerback, might be for Georgia. For a Georgia class that's already collected a lot of 5-star names, for a Georgia class that's already kind of cleaned up in the month of December, adding Tyson Campbell to that, even, you know, putting apart for a minute guys like Quay Walker and Tommy Bush, other guys that might join the class, Tyson Campbell himself would in a lot of ways feel like the cherry on top of a phenomenal class for Georgia. As far as exactly just how significant Tyson Campbell would be, I thought Jeff's historical perspective, and by Jeff I mean our buddy Jeff Sintel, when he joined us on Dog Nation Daily on Tuesday, back before the latest incarnation of Snokepocalypse 2018 here, I thought Jeff sort of put a pretty nice sort of historical significant, you know, describe the relationship that Georgia has with Campbell and why it's so meaningful right now. Here's a little bit of Jeff explaining that to us here.
Tyson Campbell is important because we've written a lot of on the site over the last 2 weeks. Georgia's only signed 2 other 5-star corners off the 24/7 Sports composite in its history in the modern era of recruiting, 2003 and 2009. That would be the 7th 5-star in this class. That has never been done.
And listen, I think that what Jeff says there makes a lot of sense, both in terms of those of us who've kind of lived through that era. We think back on the Georgia secondary, and it's been, you know, good, maybe just shy of great. There have been some very good players there. But I believe in terms of truly validating as a national championship team, I think that there's some premium positions that do that, maybe more so than others. I think cornerback is one of those. You know, a lot of teams have athletic defensive backs. A lot of teams have these sort of hybrid, is he a safety, is he a cornerback type guy. And those guys are great to have, and you got to use those to fill out your roster, and those guys are contributors for you. But true lockdown cornerbacks, I think, for the most part, are the hallmarks of the teams that are perennial college football playoff contenders and the kind of teams that can make the national championship game and actually win that game. I think on offense, I think left tackle, I think the offensive tackle position's a lot like that. But true cornerbacks are sort of the domain for national championship teams, and really kind of national championship teams only. Georgia's been kind of below that mark for most of the last decade. The absence of true elite 5-star cornerbacks, I think that may be one of the best explanations for that, as any maybe. Georgia is sort of missing out at what I believe is one of the premium positions in all of the sport. Jeff Sintel also on Tuesday went into a little bit more detail about exactly what Campbell would mean for Georgia in terms of both a tangible recruiting win and also maybe a bit of a symbolic win as well. Here's a little more from Jeff Sintel.
It means a lot on a lot of levels. Number one, biggest remaining target, yeah, that's definitely Tyson Campbell. Also would show an out-of-state victory. It kind of shows what Kirby Smart built with getting a defensive back coach, a coordinator like Mel Tucker with NFL experience, and also a guy like James Cooley to work his South Florida connection. The other thing to think about there is it's a head-to-head win against Alabama. And we said this last week, I think Tyson Campbell would be one of the top three commitment signees for Georgia total in the class of 2018.
So Jeff Centel says head-to-head win there against Alabama is what it would be, in addition to going down to South Florida and getting a big recruiting win. And obviously we know that Georgia's trying to lock down its own state. But while it tries to lock down its own state, it still wants the right to kind of cherry-pick in other states as well. And going back down to Plantation and American Heritage High School, another great opportunity to potentially do just that. Obviously Georgia assistants like Mel Tucker and James Coley, very respected. Coley down in South Florida in particular. Tucker just in general, and there would be a huge symbolic significance to winning a recruiting battle for a guy like Tyson Campbell. But here's the thing, though, that I think many of you may be wondering here. Yeah, that'd be great, but Jeff just talked about a head-to-head win against Alabama. Is that you know, maybe counting your chickens before they hatch, to use kind of a corny analogy, kind of a cliched phrase? Are you getting too much ahead of yourself by saying head-to-head win for Georgia against the Crimson Tide here for Tyson Campbell? After all, Campbell's supposed to be going to Tuscaloosa this weekend. They're having the big championship parade there in Alabama this weekend. Should Georgia fans still be nervous about Campbell going to Tuscaloosa? Obviously, you always respect the ability of Alabama to impress during a visit, and you never sort of count, you know, the things as done until they actually are done. But when Jeff Centel joined us on Tuesday, Jeff certainly gave a pretty strong impression that right now, anyway, Georgia fans have a right to feel good about Tyson Campbell.
Let me do this. Choose your fist pump, your profound exclamation of choice, or your Brandon Adams cackle. If you want to say that, feel good about where things are at right now with Tyson Campbell.
So feel good about where things are with Tyson Campbell. Now, I also know what some of the others are thinking here as well. Some of you are saying, hey, B.A., we heard this on Tuesday. Do you got anything new to provide us here? I play the Jeff Centel sound to sort of set up the sort of next, development in the Tyson Campbell story. Because while Jeff Centel tells Georgia fans they ought to feel good about Tyson Campbell, and for all the reasons why he'd be huge, Jeff Centel right now not the only one saying that maybe things are looking good between Campbell and UGA. I'll go to our buddy Chris Kirshner here, who's a frequent guest here on Dog Nation Daily. Back in the early days of the program, he was a weekly guest back when he was covering Georgia recruiting. He covers Alabama recruiting now for SECCountry.com. And he was asked a question on the Alabama page at SEC Country about Alabama's recruitment of cornerbacks. Patrick Surtain, obviously, who's thought to be in some respects an LSU lean. Tyson Campbell, who we just spent a lot of time talking about coming off his visit to Georgia. And here's what Chris Kirshner, an Alabama recruiting reporter, wrote about Tyson Campbell, and this matters to me. I'm reading from Chris Kirshner here. I think there's a better chance that Alabama lands Surtain than Campbell at this time. Tyson Campbell's fresh off an official visit to Georgia. While Surtain visited LSU last weekend, each of these schools is considered the favorite with each respective recruit. So there you've got Kirshner, an Alabama reporter, telling his Alabama fan readers that right now Tyson Campbell is favored to go to Georgia. Kirshner goes on to write here, from talking to sources, it seems as if Campbell is strongly leaning to UGA. I don't know if there's much that Alabama can do this weekend to get him to change his mind. Surtain's more of a 50-50 chance with LSU, so that's a good thing for Alabama. And he goes on to talk about why Alabama may still have a chance with Patrick Surtain, but essentially almost suggesting that Alabama fans should raise the white flag of surrender when it comes to a Tyson Campbell. Now, listen, I'm not going to tell you to spike the football here and act like it's over with Campbell before it actually is. I think you've got to, as I said, respect the Alabama visit coming up, and certainly pay homage to the fact that young men can occasionally change their mind and things can move and change relatively quickly in the world of high school football recruiting. But when Jeff Centel comes on Dog Nation Daily on Tuesday and says, hey, Georgia fans ought to feel pretty good about Tyson Campbell, when an Alabama recruiting reporter is telling his own Alabama fan readers that the Campbell ship may have sailed, that's obviously, I think, reason to get excited, both in terms of the fact that Campbell may be indeed looking at coming to Georgia, and that if he does come, he would bring a great deal of credibility with him to a Georgia class that already ranks number one overall. This really truly could be the final frontier for UGA recruiting. We also have that national championship game ended a couple Mondays ago. A better secondary, an upgraded secondary, does that prevent that touchdown from scoring? Maybe so. Tyson Campbell, if he does come to Georgia, could be that missing piece that actually leads to a national championship for the Dogs. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, and it is good to be back with you today. We're on video again at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook page. Back on the radio today at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we'll, of course, be with you in podcast form wherever podcasts can be found, iTunes, SoundCloud, the real famous DogNation.com. And for those of you who've only been with us for a short time or may not have been with us yesterday, we actually missed the show yesterday because of some snowy and icy conditions here in the Atlanta area where I live. It was not terrible for me, but it was like the thinnest coating of about, you know, an eighth of an inch of ice pretty much all throughout my neighborhood and the streets that led to the highways. I could not have made it to work. Would not want to put our staff here at risk as well. Want to keep them safe. And so for the very first time ever, the very first time ever in the three-year history of Dog Nation Daily, we missed an episode. So at some point in time, we'll make this up. We'll figure out how to, get back on schedule here and make sure that we've at least delivered the right number of shows. But as of yesterday, our Cal Ripken, Lou Gehrig streak, it got broken. I don't know what to tell you. Better safe than sorry, I guess. But it's good to be back with you here today. I'll also tell you we're looking forward to being with you Tuesday. Another weather-related event for us this week was our Marlowe's event at Buford got canceled. But we're looking forward to being with you this upcoming Tuesday at the Marlowe's in Sandy Springs for our Countdown to Signing Day event, 6 to 8 p.m. It's the Sandy Springs location, 5590 Prado Place. For those of you listening, I'll read the address one more time, 5590 Prado Place there in Sandy Springs. We do have a special guest expected to be with us that night. Jeff Sintel, of course, going to be there too. It is going to be a lot of fun. We'll look forward to talking some recruiting with you this upcoming Tuesday. Weather, I don't think, is going to be a problem, so please make plans to join us in Sandy Springs. It is always a lot of fun being there at the Sandy Springs location. We hope to be there with you for that coming up this coming Tuesday. We've got Seth Emerson here coming up in a moment on Dog Nation Daily. I'm going to talk to Seth some more about Roquan Smith and maybe just how close he indeed came to deciding to stick around Georgia for his senior season. Seth has done some reporting on that. We'll get some more details on that from Seth coming up in just a moment. Before I get to that, though, there is something I've noticed here around the SEC over the last few days, that there is this almost like envious look towards the Georgia Bulldogs. You know, can other SEC teams have the dramatic leap from year one to year two that Georgia enjoyed under Kirby Smart? Back on Tuesday's episode of our program, we talked about what Steve Ensminger, the LSU offensive coordinator, had said about that. And there's a guy named Danny Sheridan, a longtime analyst. Many of you may be aware of him. He's sort of a gambling guy. And he went on Bo Mattingly's show. Bo is a radio host in the state of Arkansas, does a good job covering the Razorbacks. And in the midst of that conversation, Sheridan, who's kind of a number cruncher guy, apparently really respects the brand new Arkansas coach Chad Morris. And he also kind of makes the comparison between Morris at Arkansas maybe doing some of what Kirby Smart has done at Georgia. Take a listen to Danny Sheridan talking about Chad Morris, and we'll go somewhere with this after the clip is done.
It's not unreasonable to think in 3 or 4 years that Morris will be like number two in the SEC, maybe right behind Alabama and as good as Georgia. That's not unreasonable. If
wow.
his trend continues and he gets those Texas guys, 4 years from now, I say Morris is right up at the top with Alabama. Not
10
holding
wins?
His own with
10 wins. 4 years from now, Chad Morris has 10 wins?
Yeah, I'll go with 10. I was going to say 9.5 and give you an over-under, but I'll take 10 wins, yes. 4 years from now, 5 for sure.
So what you hear there about Arkansas, what you heard the other day about LSU, I think some people are going to try to say this about maybe Dan Mullen at Florida, Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee. It's all this, you know, line of thought of, well, if Georgia can do it, then why couldn't fill-in-the-blank SEC school do it? Why couldn't Arkansas do it, be 10 wins, a 10-win team 3 or 4 years from now? Why couldn't LSU go from average in Ed Orgeron's first year to contending for a championship in the second year? If Georgia can do it, why couldn't any of those other schools do it? And frankly, I don't really care, you know, about Arkansas one way or another, and I'm pretty sure that you don't either. My reason for playing that clip, though, is I'm amazed at how often – people around the SEC, both fans, media people, so-called experts like Danny Sheridan, seem to miss what made Georgia in year two special, seem to miss what led to Georgia's success here in year two. I don't believe, with all due respect to Kirby Smart, that Georgia's dramatic year two turnaround occurred because Kirby Smart's some sort of magical coach, and he sort of waved a magic wand over the program and kind of spun gold out of something that had been something other than gold before he got here. That's not the way I think things worked whatsoever. In fact, I talked to Kirby Smart in a media availability, just like a lot of other reporters did, specifically about this subject back in California before the Rose Bowl. I asked him, why were things so much better in his second season? The thing that Smart pointed to was the competition that was occurring during practice, which I take to mean an upgraded roster, a deeper roster. So could Arkansas or a team like that eventually have success? Maybe so. But they're only going to get there by bringing in the kinds of players that Georgia's brought in. That's what Georgia used in 2017. And if Georgia maintains the same level of success in 2018, it's going to be the roster that Kirby Smart's built that is the reason why. We're glad to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. Got a lot of fun things coming up. Let's check in with Seth Emerson right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello to Seth Emerson here on Dog Nation Daily. Always fun having him with us on the program. And Seth, I've got to ask you to start things off here before we get into the more, I guess, serious subject matter of the day. As a Maryland man such as yourself, a place that's probably no stranger to snow during the winter, how have you managed around the state of Georgia here over the last couple of days, navigating the ice and snow pretty well? I imagine you must sometimes get a little chuckle at those of us who maybe don't enjoy these kind of driving conditions very much.
Well, they're not good, you know, when you're in Maryland or Michigan, where my wife is from, or Wisconsin or wherever. It's just a matter of just being used to it. It's actually much better in Athens than it is in Atlanta. It's weird. I don't understand really the dynamics of it. Maybe it's the mountains or whatever, but obviously there's no local Athens news station, so we watch the Atlanta TV stations in the morning and WSB, of course, because I'm a Cox loyal employee. Whichever station I'm watching, they kind of do the temperature comparison. And the other day, Athens was like listed as like 8 degrees, you know, hotter than Atlanta.
Right?
And I said, well, we're in the right spot. And you see all these kind of horror stories coming out of Atlanta, and these roads are terrible and still icy and whatever. And we're doing okay here. I took the kids to school, to daycare, and went over like one icy spot in 15 minutes. So things are a little better. UGA is open today.
Okay.
Opens at 10 o'clock. Local schools are closed, but UGA is open.
Yeah, I mean, for me, we've been doing this show for almost 3 years. Yesterday was the first day we've ever missed a show. There was just, it wasn't a lot of snow and ice, but it was like this thin coating on all the roads. And listen, Seth, I'm not that good of a driver to begin with. So, me being a son of the South that I am, the chances of me making it safely to work, probably not all that great, to be honest with you, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, like, I've lived in the South for, deep South for 15, 16 years now. I've lived in the state of Georgia almost as long as I lived in Maryland. So I'm not going to be snooty and whatever. You know, people up north that make fun of us in the South for not dealing well with snow, like, look, number one, we don't deal with it all the time. Number two, it doesn't make any sense for us to have 15 snow plows for every town the way they do everywhere north of the Mason-Dixon line. It's just something that it doesn't happen often enough to deal with it. And, yeah, of course, we're going to not deal with it very well.
So one of the things I was interested in talking to you about today was the Roquan Smith situation. Obviously, he's gone to the NFL now. That's the right choice for him. He's going to be, I think, a top 15 pick, and that is a lot of money, too much to ever turn down. But, you know, a lot of our commenters that watch us on video had been saying for a few days, oh, I think he's, you know, I think he's, you know, thinking about coming back. I think he might come back. And I didn't scoff at the people who were saying that, but I scoffed at the notion that Smith might indeed, you know, return. I respect the people giving the opinions. I just didn't believe the opinion. And yet, based on your reporting, it sounds like Smith did at least consider returning to Georgia. How serious did that get for him, and why would he have postponed that kind of money for maybe one more year at Georgia?
Well, I think that was what it ultimately came down to. Was like, Roquan, I know you love Athens. You don't mind going to school, unlike some other people. You want to get your degree. You want to stick to your senior year. But, boy, look at that money. And, you could look at the insurance. And I never looked too hard into whether there's a cap on the insurance premium that you could get and everything. But ultimately, it's just so much money and such a good opportunity that, and I don't know this for a fact, but I wouldn't be surprised if Kirby had sat him down and said, look, you know, you need to go. Like, well, we loved having you, but you got to go. You got to do this for yourself. But I think he legitimately, you know, really thought about it and was torn about it because, look, the two biggest names entering deadline day on Monday were Roquan Smith and Bryce Love. And Bryce Love came back to Stanford. Mm-hmm. And Roquan took it almost all the way to the deadline. So, I mean, I did expect him to go all along, but I knew that the longer it went, the more chance there was that he was, you know, really seriously thinking about it.
So when you look at 2018 for Georgia, I don't think any of us would say that there's an inside linebacker that's going to match anywhere near what Roquan Smith was able to provide Georgia. I think there's some talented guys in that group. There's just not a Butkus Award winner there probably right now. And what I think that means is that Georgia's got to have a star emerge at another position, a kind of a breakout guy, the same way that Roquan broke out for his junior season. Somebody else at some other spot's got to be able to do that for Georgia to sort of maintain some of the edge that it enjoyed defensively this season. When you look, and I know it's obviously very, you know, early in the process, but when you look at what Georgia brings back for 2018, do you see a guy who has the potential of making the same kind of leap or a similar kind of leap to what Roquan did, to go from being a good starter to being maybe something of a household name by the time the season was done?
I almost hate the way you worded that, because I don't want someone to – I don't know what you're saying, but I don't want someone to say, oh, you know, DeAndre Baker, Jonathan Ledbetter is going to be, you know, the next Roquan Smith, whatever. But I know what you mean. DeAndre Baker had a really good year. And if he has as good a year as a senior that he had as a junior, that's really good for Georgia's defense. If he is even better, you know, he's entering All-American category. Jonathan Ledbetter is a guy that finished really strong. He's someone that, and Tyler Clark looked really good the second half of the season. I don't know about inside linebacker. I mean, we got to see what happens with Natrez Patrick. Monty Rice, I would guess, will also start somewhere. J.R. Reed looked really good most of the season at safety. And at outside linebacker, you know, DeAndre Walker in spot duty always seems to make a play. It's a matter of, you know, how much he can do being on the field 60-70% of the time. And Walter Grant's another guy that I kind of think about at outside linebacker. As you know, he and DeAndre Walker at this point, the odds-on favorites to replace Bellamy and Carter in those starting spots. So there's a lot of candidates there for Georgia to not have a huge drop-off on defense. I don't know if there's anybody there that I'd say that guy is Roquan Smith difference-making type. I mean, DeAndre Baker could be a lockdown cornerback and first-team All-American next year, but that only shuts off one part of the game. Roquan Smith shut off, like, everything, because people couldn't run on Georgia consistently, or they couldn't the short passing game couldn't be there as well, because you a short pass and then Roquan Smith's right there making a tackle.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only thing you can really do is try and pass on them deep. And even then, Roquan Smith ended up very quietly leading Georgia in sacks this year. So he just was so effective in all facets of the game. That's why it's kind of so important at that one position to be dominant the way he was dominant.
Yeah, he almost defied defensive scheme. Roquan almost was his own defensive scheme that you know, his instincts either to know where the ball was or know where it was going. I mean, I love Seth guys that are – you don't have to be a football expert to see how much better they are than everybody else. And Roquan was the kind of person that you don't have to be an X's and O's expert to sort of watch how he sort of teleports himself from where he is to where the ball was going. I think it's literally noticeable by anyone who was watching the games, and therefore that makes him all the more difficult to replace.
Right. I mean, when you're a middle linebacker who was so good going to either side of the field he was, I mean, it's just like I said, DeAndre Baker could be great this year, but – that means he just shuts off one side of the field. What about the other side of the field? What about the run game? At inside linebacker, you know, you just have the – when you're that great, as Roquan was, you have that much ability to just kind of affect the game by yourself. That said, well, I do think inside linebacker is going to be very key for Georgia this year, because they've got to fill his role, Reggie Carter's role, and again, we'll see with Natrez Patrick. They've got in Tyler Clark, Jonathan Ledbetter, Malik Herring, I'm going to forget some people, Walker, Walter Grant, Baker, J.R. Reed, I think Richard LeCount could make a difference as a safety. I mean, they've got a lot of potential risers there that could, you know, just kind of, maybe you don't have one defensive, you know, All-American this year, but you have a bunch of really good All-SEC candidates.
Let me talk about Trent Thompson for a moment. At one point in time, he tweeted out that he was enjoying his senior season or looking forward to senior season. I joked on here that Twitter's not a binding contract, that he'd never be, you know, sort of held to that statement. In fact, it does turn out he changes his mind, decides to go to the NFL draft. I don't really quite know how NFL draft scouts are going to view Thompson, who I thought was a very good college player, but I don't know how he matches what the NFL is necessarily looking for. I mean, what are your thoughts on Thompson's decision to leave? Can you shed some more light on why he indeed chose to do it? And kind of, I think of Thompson as somewhat of a mysterious guy at Georgia for a number of reasons. Just any general thoughts you have on him getting ready to say goodbye to the Dogs here?
Well, like I wrote about yesterday, Trey Scott told me that he thought Thompson had a really productive year. That he came really close to getting some sacks a bunch of times, and his high school coach, Octavia Jones, as I put in that piece, you know, who was obviously following Thompson's year pretty closely, said, look, if he had played as many snaps as he did as a sophomore, he may have, you know, equaled his tackle numbers from his sophomore year, and he was battling injuries the whole year. I think Trenton's just a case of a kid that probably was thinking 3 years when he came to Georgia, hedged on it back and forth a little bit sometimes, but ultimately, when it came down to it, said, yeah, I'm ready to go. And, you know, you don't need to be a first-round pick or even a second-round pick to have a long and productive NFL career. Thompson, let's also not forget, the guy that was the number one overall prospect in the country 3 years ago, according to 24/7. So it's not like there's not talent there. And it's not like he can't, you know, do something at the combine, do something in individual workouts to really see his draft stock go up.
Thought Georgia got a nice basketball win against LSU. I want to save some time at the end to ask you about that. Let me squeeze in a couple sort of rapid-fire type questions before we get there. A lot of people are asking me about this. I'll ask you to provide some information for us on that. When do you expect to hear a destination for Jacob Eason? He's obviously announced his intent to transfer. When will he announce indeed where he is in fact going, you think?
Oh, I've got no idea. I mean, I wonder if that Seattle Times report kind of made them want to make sure that ultimately he is going to end up at Washington, and he was already going to end up at Washington, but they want to make sure that, you know, enough time passes so it doesn't look like that was preordained. I would still tend to think that, but that's just kind of based on my own logic, not any, you know, independent reporting on it.
Do we know, have a guess, I'm sure you've written about this, I can't remember what you've written at this point though, about what Kirby's planning on doing for the 10th assistant coach here?
No, I would have been surprised a few weeks ago to find out that we'd be this far down the road and he hasn't hired somebody. I kind of thought that he did have someone probably in line, but I think ultimately I did hear kind of right away when the championship game was over that he wasn't really in a hurry. You know, the thing about it is there's no, like, natural position that needs to be filled.
Yeah.
They've got so many teams with this extra spot are using it to hire a special teams coordinator because, you know, unlike what some people thought during the Mark Richt era, Georgia wasn't the only team that didn't have a special teams coordinator. Well, Georgia has a special teams coordinator, and Shane Beamer, and special teams had a good year with Scott Fountain's help, and now obviously he's gone. But, you know, what do you do with that? I mean, do you just elevate Jay Johnson? But where does Jay Johnson go? Do you, like, make him tight ends coach? Shane Beamer is just the special teams coordinator. There's no, like, natural opening that they have to go fill. So I imagine my guess is that Kirby is waiting to just get just the right guy who probably is a very good recruiter because that's what he always wants on a staff. And then we'll kind of carve out a role for him.
The most often asked name in our comment section every day right now is D'Angelo Gibbs. I get why that is. I think when I look at guys who look like they ought to be big-time players, Gibbs just has the look of a big-time defensive back. He obviously has some issues there at the end of the season. Is he still a member in good standing in this Georgia team? Do you expect him to be, you know, right there in the mix for, you know, opportunities to contribute, you know, in the spring, the summer, and into the fall? Can you give us any kind of additional update on here on D'Angelo Gibbs? Don't know if you talked to him in any of the open locker rooms. Can you kind of shed some light on Gibbs here?
No, I did not talk to him because he wasn't with the team.
Good point. That's a good point.
He was not with the team like dating back to, he didn't make the trip to, what was that one road game, maybe before Georgia Tech. But, yeah, he was not at Georgia Tech. which was one of the first signs that something was up with him, because they did not have a limit on how many they could take. He's not with the team. He wasn't with the team for bowl practice. He was not at the Rose Bowl or the national championship. His cousin, J.R. Reed, said it was a medical issue and kind of left it at that. I've heard some things, but I think that they're trying to get it back. I haven't confirmed whether or not he's still enrolled for the spring semester. I'm hoping to get some info on that, but may not get that until signing day, which is the next scheduled time to talk to Kirby. So I don't really know. He may end up being fine, but I don't know if he's fine right now.
Well, we'll certainly look forward to a lot more of your reporting on that. Last thing for you, and we appreciate your time. Joe Lunardi, the famous ESPN bracketologist, put out his tweet earlier this week about how important he viewed the Georgia-LSU game, game obviously in Baton Rouge, two teams fighting to get into the NCAA tournament. Georgia goes out and wins that game. I thought they'd made a nice play at the end to sort of get the ball to Yonte Maton to get the game-winning basket.
Yeah.
For those people who've been obviously immersed in football and recruiting here, I mean, can you just give us a couple thumbnail sketches on kind of where you view the Georgia basketball season at this point?
Well, they're doing two things this year. They've done two things this year that they haven't done the last couple years, which they're closing out some games. They're being very good in the clutch, like the LSU game you mentioned. They designed the right play, Turtle to Yonte, and then not only that, but had really good defense to prevent LSU from getting off a good final shot. So they win that game. They won, was it the Marquette game, or it was one of those games out west, one of those road games. They did very well, kind of similar fashion. And the other thing they did this year that they haven't done in past years, they've done well enough in non-conference to have a good resume entering SEC play. But then they kind of gagged against South Carolina at home, which was a bad loss. Now you kind of make up for it a little bit by winning at LSU, which had a good RPI. So I think it's kind of 50-50 right now on making the tournament. SEC is very good. Auburn all of a sudden is number 9 in the RPI and is ranked, although they lost to Alabama last night. If Georgia can knock off Auburn on Saturday, that puts them in great shape. If they can't, it's not a bad loss. SEC is really tough, but the nice thing is that in basketball, when your conference is really tough and you have to play a bunch of tough games, you may take some L's, but that helps you in the computers.
Yeah.
The SEC could get 8-9 teams in the tournament this year. And I think this is one of those years, especially with the way Georgia played in non-conference, that they can go 9-9 in conference and still make it.
All right, Seth, we appreciate your analysis on that. Appreciate everything else as well. Good to have you here on Dog Nation Daily. Stay warm. We'll look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Talk to you later.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always fun to have Seth Emerson on Dog Nation Daily. And, yeah, you know, we'll continue to look at the Georgia basketball situation here. You know, this is a team that I thought that Seth kind of described that, pretty well. I watched that South Carolina game on Saturday, and that was incredibly frustrating. South Carolina just wanted it more. And obviously in front of the home crowd, you'd like to see Georgia, show up and give a better showing of itself than it did. And it's obvious, in my opinion, to say that the Gamecocks wanted it more. But that was pretty apparent from watching the game. The LSU game on the road, a much better, I think, representation of hopefully who Georgia is, and we'll kind of pay attention to that. And we'll continue to try to decide, how much y'all want basketball to be a part of what we do here on Dog Nation Daily this time of year. It's always, if you don't mind me saying so, a bit of a controversial subject. Some of you don't want to talk basketball at all. I sort of get that. Some of you wish there'd be more basketball on the program. I also sort of get that as well. I live to serve you all, so you can weigh in to me at Dog Nation Daily or in the comments section about whether or not you want to hear any basketball talk here on Dog Nation Daily. For now, though, we'll transition to our SEC through, and of course, I'll remind you the Dog Nation Daily brought to you in part by our friends at MyBookie. We're coming up on conference championship weekend here in professional football. That means a chance for some of you to make some money if you play where the pros play at MyBookie. I'm talking about getting your bets down. Your point spread, your money line, your over-under, it's all there for you at mybookie.ag, the website. The reason why folks like MyBookie is because it's known for that fast, no-hassle payout. They pay out faster than really anybody that I know of. That's what they're known for. In 2 business days or less, they're going to be able to get your money to you when you win. And right now, speaking of money, you can already be a winner before you even get going here, because your first deposit at MyBookie can be matched up to 100%. matched up to 100%, but you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. That's spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G, Dog Nation. Use the promo code Dog Nation. The website, mybookie.ag, and your first deposit can be matched up to 100%. You play, you win, you get paid at mybookie.ag. Just make sure you use the promo code Dog Nation for that big time, maybe up to 100% match there. All right, news around the SEC here. Let's start with Alabama. I guess the expectation here is the reports are out there. Tuscaloosa News, I believe, has this first, that Mike Loxley is going to be promoted to Alabama offensive coordinator. Saban kind of choosing to sort of keep this within the family for a guy that has been, you know, at Maryland and kind of been well-traveled. This is a respected coach. This is a very good recruiter and the kind of guy that was, you know, was looking to maybe move on and go take a big job somewhere else if he had not gotten the Alabama offensive coordinator position. I think that Saban has been in a position where he's changed OCs a lot lately. I don't think the situation for him now is quite as dire as it was before the 2014 season when Lane Kiffin was clearly brought in to fix something that was, it's unfair to say it wasn't working, but it was certainly trending in the wrong direction. If you go back and look at the great rivalry in the SEC West at that time, LSU and Alabama, most of those games were low-scoring games. Most of those games were defensive-dominated games. And Nick Saban just saw the way of football changing, going to Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M, what Gus Malzahn was doing at Auburn. And he knew he had to at least incorporate some of that into what his team was doing, and Lane Kiffin provided that for Alabama. In the aftermath of that, I think Brian Daboll last season, I think Mike Loxley this season, will kind of already be working within the template already established by Lane Kiffin. So, I don't think Loxley's as good as Lane Kiffin as a play caller, but at this stage for Alabama, I'm not sure you need for him to be. I did think this was interesting, also from the Tuscaloosa News. It sounds like there was a bit of a dispute within the program about Hugh Freeze. You know, we told you on Tuesday that Freeze had been in Tuscaloosa for a meeting. I sort of wondered aloud on SEC Country Live if all of this wasn't some sort of big show to get Freeze back in the coaching conversation again. Alabama never intended to hire him anyway. Maybe that's the case because Saban, who likes to operate with a certain degree of secrecy, was certainly very open about the Hugh Freeze situation. But the report from the Tuscaloosa News is Saban wanted to hire him. There was some pushback from some people within Alabama about hiring him. That doesn't make any sense because nobody can tell Saban what to do. Greg Byrne, the athletic director, can't tell Saban what to do. So that may be the story that's out there from sources, but some part of that just doesn't make a ton of sense. Also, the other part of this report from the Tuscaloosa News is that Alabama thought it might need the approval of SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey about hiring Freeze. Well, there's no stipulation on that. The NCAA hand down, the infractions issue with Hugh Freeze, all of that was frankly kind of a strange story. This all sort of feels like just kind of a PR machine to kind of make Freeze look like a coaching candidate again. Maybe he was never indeed going to be hired at Alabama. A couple other quick stories to get to here. Auburn has acted quickly. Herb Hand moves on to Texas. They have rehired J.B. Grimes, who had another previous stint as the Auburn offensive line coach. That's the direction the Tigers are going to go there. Gus Malzahn making that decision. And this is key for Auburn, both in terms of the offensive lineman it's still trying to chase down. Not enough offensive linemen for this 2018 class. They need more. Maybe Grimes is going to help with that. But I also thought Herb Hammond was one of the top assistant coaches in the SEC, and I thought one of the real strengths for Auburn in 2017 was its offensive line. I think a lot of Auburn fans are happy to have Grimes back in the mix there, but I think that Hand leaves some pretty big shoes to fill. I'll also mention this here real quick. There is a lot of chatter about Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, which I find fascinating. Now, I think Tennessee is a long way away from being good, and you can read that as me saying I think that Tennessee is a long way away from being an on-field threat to Georgia. I just don't think the roster there is talented enough to do that as of yet. But, man, it is interesting, the J.J. Peterson commitment, the Quay Walker visit that goes down this past weekend, good enough that Walker cancels a visit to Florida. There is a lot of noise, a lot of momentum around Pruitt at Tennessee, and I think that momentum can be kind of a tricky thing people who do what I do for a living want to define that in specific terms. I think I don't know that momentum exists the way that a lot of sports media think it does. But if momentum does exist at all, Tennessee seems to have it in a way that Florida doesn't. I think one of the real stories here in January of 2018 in the SEC right now is these programs trying to build themselves up. I think Pruitt, the good recruiter at Tennessee, is stealing some thunder from Dan Mullen, the guy at Florida right now, who just does not seem to be developing the same kind of chat around the program. There's a lot of buzz around Tennessee that doesn't exist in Gainesville with the Gators right now. And I don't know what that means for on-field success, but, man, as far as, like, recruiting issues go, I think clearly Tennessee has the upper hand over Florida right now, which I find to be kind of interesting. We'll make that your SEC through. All right, so wrapping up here on Dog Nation Daily. Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of folks are right, you know, to say that they think a guy like DeAndre Walker could be that guy, you know, for Georgia next season. I think that's an opinion worthy of respect. So I wanted to read those comments here on the show today. I'll also say this, that, you know, Tyler Clark shows up in the Seth Emerson interview before. A lot of the Oklahoma writers had told Seth Emerson, Seth wrote about this coming off the Rose Bowl, that when they were talking about the defensive players that hurt them the most, hurt Oklahoma the most in the Rose Bowl, it was Tyler Clark that got mentioned right there along Roquan Smith in that game. So expecting a big leap for Tyler Clark next season, that probably makes some sense too. Let me also close the show by doing what we do every day at this time. We believe here at Dog Nation Daily, a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. And that means we do the Gator Hater Countdown. 282 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville. We think it's another win over the Florida Gators, and we'll count it down every single day here on Dog Nation Daily, and see you tomorrow.